Hello, and welcome to Roll for Topic, a roundtable discussion about topics related to running role-playing games. I'm Chris Salzman.
And I'm Andy Rao.
Andy, I think I've done that intro, well, I guess 160 some times or so. And like, it's like a mindfulness practice for me to slow down enough to actually hear the words that I'm saying sometimes. So maybe episode 200, we'll rewrite it.
Yeah. That would be, yeah.
It'd be jarring.
Yeah, it'd be jarring. Yeah, I'm pretty used to it too. I'm trying to remember what the intro says and I can't really remember. So
yeah. Well, you just search your heart. It's in there somewhere.
Okay. right.
Before we jumped on, you mentioned that you had a book update that you wanted to share with me.
Yeah, I guess my first update is it's really sunny and bright outside today. I don't know if it is where you live after like negative million degree temperatures here. So, so I am vindicated once again in not completely shoveling my driveway.
Yes, you are. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. My daughter declared yesterday that she was going to change into shorts. And I was like, not quite yet.
Okay. But yeah, on to real topics and RPG adjacent topics. So I, over the last month, made the decision that I was going to finish reading Stephen King's Dark Tower series.
Oh, wow. Okay.
So back in like the 80s and 90s, I read the first four books of it. And then I stopped at that point. I just got kind of Stephen King'd out because I probably had read like 40 books by Stephen King in the space of like 12 months.
Which is like 40,000 pages
of Stephen King. Yes. And then I never really got back into it. So over the last month, I've reread book four and then five and six, and I'm now on the final book, which is called The Dark Tower. And when I finish, it feels very, very role play-y. Just constantly as I'm reading, like my brain is spinning about like how would I do this, like how would you make this setting or this story. So I don't know, maybe once I'm done. I know I've been chatting a lot with John from Splatbook about it as I read, just sharing observations and complaints and things like that. And yeah, I don't know. I think I'm going to want to talk about it. Have you ever delved into that series at all?
I have not. I've only read by King. I think I've only read The Mist and maybe a couple short stories. I started to read The Shining and got so creeped out within like the first 50 pages that I was like,
yeah,
not for me right now. The Dark Tower series is interesting to me because I know you and John love it quite a bit. And has he read all of them?
He has, yes.
Okay. So I think it's only you and him are the only people that I know that have actually exhaustively read through the series.
Well, it's made me think a lot about how many RPGs have taken a stab at sort of the multiverse concept. Because the Dark Tower series, it's switching between different worlds. Like there's kind of the main fantasy realm where the quest takes place, but there's regular trips back to like the real world or splinter universes of the real world. Some of them are so big they're like occasionally this one of the books will be all set back in the real world.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
And over the years, I mean, I feel like people have tried on a regular pace to make universe or multiverse skipping RPGs, and some of them seem to be good games and successful by their own standards, but none of them are big hits. Like, you know, I think of when I was younger, there was Torg, which was all about skipping to different timelines and different realities. And I'm sure some people remember that fondly, and I'm sure it has survived to some extent, but nobody you know probably owns it or is running a game of it, right?
And yeah.
I know there's been more recent ones. Monty Cook Games had one called The Strange, which was about skipping around dimensions. And it just surprises me a little bit, especially given that the biggest entertainment franchise of the last decade won't shut up about the multiverse. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts of that? Like, does a multiverse game, does that sound like intrinsically appealing, or do you need a lot more? Do you need to know a lot more about it before you decide if it sounds fun or not?
Yeah, it doesn't sound intrinsically, I don't know, engaging to me. I'm not like a big Marvel fan, right? Like it's fine. Like I enjoy it. I think if my kids get into it, I will probably get into it too. But yeah, it's not something that has like really grabbed me. That said, like I adore like the Golden Age comics where like some of this multiverse stuff started cropping up. like the old Flash comics where, you know, he's going between different Earths and stuff on his cosmic treadmill or whatever it's called. Like, I love that stuff, but I always love it because it's grounded sort of in the, and then he returns, like Barry Allen returns back to his like after he's done this like little jaunt, you know, into another universe. So I mean, like, I think like I explore this a little bit in like D&D. I feel like D&D sort of allows for that, right? Like you can kind of like hack it into any system if you really want to go somewhere else. But I think for the most part, any campaign that I've been in, like there's enough to sort of do in one universe that you don't really need another one. Although, I mean, like you could see it very easily being a setup for an interesting campaign where every session is like, oh, now we're going, you know, Quantum Leap style. We're going to this, like this other universe, you know, and coming back, you know, like doing some sort of task and coming back after it's done.
It makes me wonder, you know, and I, as you talked, I thought, you know, obviously there's Planescape too, which beloved by many, but I think probably not played by like the biggest chunk of D&D players.
Yeah, I think that's probably true.
I always thought like that the appeal of, you know, shows like Sliders or other games or shows where every episode, every game, you go into like a new dimension was that you were getting to play in a wide variety of genres, right? So now we're in like the post-apocalypse world, now we're in the Wild West world, now we're in the whatever, the fantasy medieval world. D&D kind of allows you to do that already. I mean, if you look at any of the big kind of modern fantasy game settings, when I think of like Paizo's Pathfinder setting, I mean, there's like, it has all of those genres are places on the map. Like there's the kingdom of the like steampunk guns, and it's next to like the kingdom of undead horror.
Yeah.
And it's next to, you know, the kingdom of elven forests. And, and while that's not exactly shifting genres, you know, if you want the flavor of like steampunk, you can just go to that part of the map and keep playing with the character and the plot lines you like.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm talking to myself in circles here. But I guess I'm failing to find something that excites me about a multiverse skipping game.
Yeah, even though you're really enjoying reading The Dark Tower.
Yeah, like, it makes
Yeah.
I mean, with a book, it is a little different. I mean, the places they go to are important to the characters or to the story. So you'd have to imagine it's like a GM who is just keeping a really close eye on the through line. And making sure that as you skip to the Wild West Kingdom, it still has relevance and will mean something to when you come back and resume your quest. So, I mean, when you're writing, you can be the perfect GM who pulls it all back together.
Yeah, it's. I mean, I think your mention of the through line sticks out to me because I think that might be the tricky part, like the part to sort of crack if you're going to do this at the table is having that through line. Whether the through line is you're chasing someone sort of around the different different multiverses or it's like I mentioned, sort of a hub and spoke thing where it's like you are, you know, you have like sort of your home base and it's like you're getting these quests to sort of go out to these different places. But I think eventually the players are going to want to see something that's like, this is why these are connected, or like these are why we're choosing these places and why we're going. Because like part of the pitch of the multiverse is like, right, it's like there's infinite numbers of these universes and stuff. So then you need to make the decision of like, well, then why are we going to these ones, right? So it's like it's the same problem that you might have with like travel or like in a hex crawl. It's like, well, which way do we go? Like, you know, like we have to have some reason why we're heading in this direction. Otherwise, it's just going to be an analysis paralysis. This is reminding me. So like my daughter and I just watched Wizard of Oz for the first time. So she just watched it for the first time. Yeah, it holds up. It is a wild movie. Like, right, like, you know, you have sort of the intro in Kansas, and then they land. She murders a witch. Everybody starts singing immediately. Like there's no world building really set up for it. It's just like, bam, she's in Oz.
You
know, in Oz and kind of like having this adventure and stuff. But like, yeah, it's sort of like in a way it is a little bit of like a multiverse thing, right? Like, you know, so like in the story, she's imagining it's a dream, right? Like she's sort of like, you know, tying all this back to her life and, you know, kind of working through some stuff that way and then coming back and she sees all the people that were in Oz, like, you know, back there and stuff. But I mean, it's really fun. It's like a fun jaunt for her to go out there have this big adventure, learn a little bit about herself and like what she can do and what she's capable of, and then come on back. But that said, like, I also don't know if I'd ever want to watch a like Wizard of Oz 2 where Dorothy goes to like, I don't know. Yeah. Wild West world and like becomes a gunslinger. Right. Like, yeah. So it kind of comes down to me like it's like a question of genre as well. Like getting back to, we've talked about this many times on the podcast. Like, I think your players would need to buy into the genre of exploring the multiverse versus like the genre of like, each week we're kind of going to do, yeah, we're going to do a Wild West, we're going to do a fantasy, we're going to do a mystery, whatever that is. I think like the genre has to be the, like, we're kind of hopping around different places. And that has to be the thing that gets them excited.
Are you already thinking about how you could do a gritty modern reboot of The Wizard of Oz? How has that not happened, by the way? It's got to be in the public domain.
I mean, you know, so I'm watching Wicked with her right now. So we rolled straight from Wizard of Oz into Wicked. And I think that is sort of the gritty reboot that we're going to get.
I've not seen or read or watched Wicked. So
okay. So we are not quite done with it. What I will say is it is a movie that is 100% made for theater kids. I'm not a theater kid, but I'm enjoying it immensely watching it. I think I might be a theater kid at heart. That's fine. I own it. It is absolutely gorgeous. Like, the movie is exquisitely shot. Like, the sets are really fascinating. The colors are amazing. The singing is phenomenal. But it's also kind of a deeply silly movie that's trying to recontextualize a lot of The Wizard of Oz. Which is fine. Like, I'm into it, and my daughter's into it too. So, yeah.
Well, that's fun. If you haven't, I haven't read them in decades, but I do remember really enjoying the Oz books. And there's a lot of them, and I couldn't tell you which ones were good or if they're all worth reading or not. But I will say the ones I read were as enjoyable as the first one. So
yeah, I've heard this from a lot of people that they hold up super well. So I think when we're done with Wicked, when we're done reading The Hobbit, we'll probably try one of the Wizard of Oz books.
Hey, that's awesome. Yeah, well, keep us posted.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So then you also had a topic, because it sounds like you're prepping for a game coming up.
I am. Yeah. Yes. So I could use a little advice, and maybe we could just talk through this topic. I am prepping a fantasy game that I want to incorporate a wilderness survival and exploration. So when I started thinking about this, I turned to some of the community for help, and I was like, help me, how do I make travel interesting? And then a lot of people were like, well, why, go listen, you idiot, go listen to like your own podcast episode on making travel interesting. And I was like, well, it's not exactly travel I'm talking about, where I want to find a way to make the time in between point A and point B somewhat interesting. I want to take that period of time in between point A and point B and make that like the focus of the game. So exploring and staying alive in the wilderness while you do it in like an unmapped, uncharted area. There's a strong strain of this through D&D and through all the way back to the earliest D&D, where, you know, you're moving around on a blank hex map and rolling random encounters. But I was just wondering how, if you could help me think through what are the fun parts of that experience and what would be fun to game? I mean, like, if you imagine the task is like, here's this giant chunk of unexplored land, map it, spend the next 6 months thoroughly mapping it out, and then come back with your findings. What are the fun parts of survival and exploration that should be part of the game, and what are the parts that should be like heavily abstracted and kind of skipped over, I guess?
Yeah.
Do you have any initial thoughts?
That's a super interesting question. My first reaction is the parts that you should foreground and the parts that you should like skip over are probably going to depend on like what the table is interested in doing.
Sure.
So if they don't want to track rations, or that's just like a painful thing for them to track, it's probably not something that you want to make like the core part of what you're doing. I guess just another question that I had was what's the party's sort of goal and mission, right? Getting back to that, like, is their mission to just go look around, or are they trying to do something?
Let's say, just for the purpose of this discussion, the mission is like make a map of this territory and bring it back to the king.
Oh, okay. So that's pretty interesting then. That seems to me like you could So are you going to actually have them physically draw it, or are you going to draw it as they're going?
I haven't figured that out. And like, so that, let's have that be part of this discussion too. Is it fun to put a big blank hex map and charge one of the players with like drawing its features as we go?
So I will tell the one time I experimented with having the players draw the map, it went disastrously. But this was more like my problem than anyone else's. We were doing the one shot of Strahd, like Strahd Must Die Tonight, I think is the name of it. And so I was like, cool, well, I'll just have them draw the map of the castle as they're moving through it. And it immediately,
Oh my gosh.
And that castle, like, there's so many twists and turns and everything loops back in on itself. The problem that I had was that I had a map behind the screen that I was looking at, and I was trying to describe like what they should be drawing on the other side.
Yeah.
And those got out of sync so fast, and I could not like wrap my head around like you know the fact that like it's fine, whatever they draw is fine, like I just have these sort of room descriptions. I was just like, no, okay, I can't do this, I need to take that control, kind of sketch it out. That said, I mean, I think there's really something to that of like, okay, well, it's up to you to draw the map that you're, you know, that as you're sort of seeing it, because part of the fun of that is like, I mean, what if it doesn't make sense, right? And then you have to go back and kind of figure it out. And you could even as a GM have fun with that too, of like giving them, like explaining and like describing places where it's like, well, this doesn't fit at all. Like what's going on here?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah. I also typically don't have players draw maps because most of the maps in my games are of kind of like tactical scale environments. Mm-hmm. And yeah, after the first time you spend 10 minutes being like, no, it's like a 15-foot wall and then diagonal to it. It's like, just stop and let me draw it. Like, so what I imagine is a little bit less like, no, the river bends at a 40-degree angle here, and a little bit more just like annotating the hex they're in with its contents. You know what I mean? Like there's a lake in this hex and the village and a small village in a troll lair, you know.
Yeah.
It's not that important that you get those spatially related to each other, I don't think, for the purposes of like handing the king the map at the end of your quest, right? So setting aside the question of encounters and random encounters, both of which I have plenty of experience dealing with in D&D, what are the tasks outside of like what you might call the adventuring scenes that should be modeled to make it feel right, like you're hacking it in the wilds and exploring uncharted territory? So like mapping, we've talked about, so they've got a map. Is that like a skill roll? Is that like a player at the table drawing it? Is someone making a skill roll to see how accurately they draw it and drawing the map wrong if they fail the roll? Like so what are the tasks that like, so mapping, like camping, right? Gathering food, hunting or foraging, gathering food.
It's your Oregon Trail things, right? Yeah. It's like, like tracking rations and hunting and, you know, like, you know, fording rivers, those sorts of things.
Do you remember at the last RFD Con, you played in a game of Twilight 2000 that I ran?
I was just going to bring that up.
I was cramming a lot of stuff into a short like 3-hour session, so I don't want to extrapolate too much from a one shot. However, in that game, if you recall, the like non-adventuring stuff was like probably took up twice as much amount of game time as the actual adventuring stuff. And what I'm talking about is like you deciding who is going to go hunt for food and who is going to go set up the camp and who is that sort of thing. Was that fun? And like, what was fun about it if it was fun?
It was fun in context of playing that specific game. If I was playing a fantasy role-playing game like D&D, I think I would have been pretty annoyed with some of the bookkeeping that was happening. But like the bookkeeping was the fun part, right? So like in that game, right, every sort of turn or like segment of the day, right, we had to sort of decide who was keeping watch, who was resting, who was doing this, that, or the other. Right. Like, so you needed to keep on doing those things. And there was only like a discrete number of like slots to do that. I think in like a D&D fantasy game, I would want like the gathering food or like, you know, rations or something like that. I think I'd want that to be either more more like D&D, right? So it's like you're actually going out and doing an attack roll against a whatever, a bear mm-hmm. that you're going to eat, you know, or I would want that to be like just a lot simpler when it came down to it. Because I don't think like that's the interest of playing a TTRPG necessarily, like a fantasy TTRPG. I think the interest there is going to be a lot more exploring sort of what's on your character sheet and how it can help you through your problems versus having the board game bookkeeping elements. Right. Cause like if they bring, like if one of the characters is a cleric, right. Like, right. I think there's a spell in D&D, right. It's at a certain point, it's just like make food and water. Right. Like, yes. So or you have a druid or whatever has like good berry, right? Like, so you have like all these sort of ways to get around like sort of the ration question. And I think it's more fun if they can lean on their character sheet to answer those questions versus being like, okay, who's hunting, you know, who's hunting today?
So assuming we have a somewhat simplified version of that,
mm-hmm.
what I wouldn't want is that at the end of each in-game day, we stop and everyone makes a bunch of rolls and we succeed or we fail. And then when everyone wakes up, they either have like mechanical penalties because they failed their roll mm-hmm. or they don't because they succeeded. That sounds really boring. So how do we let the players like make choices that have like pros and cons to them? Mm-hmm. In like Twilight 2000, you could like push it and not spend time doing some of the important stuff like mm-hmm. hunting for food or finding water. You could push it into like to get farther on the map. There is this idea that if you're playing this in a campaign, that's all going to compound. Like your mm-hmm. choices like that are going to start compounding to make your life difficult. Does achieving that sort of over the long term cumulative effect of the choices you're making about the activities to focus on, is there a way mm-hmm. to do that without having it take up too much table time?
As I'm thinking about this, I'm kind of thinking about like, I think go make a map for a king needs to have some sort of time limit imposed on it in order to make this interesting. So it's like the king needs a map in 2 weeks time of this region. Hmm. Right. And so then you have sort of like we have to go, you know, we actually have to go get all the way out there and get all the way back, you know, in that amount of time. Right. So that's going to modulate maybe like, you know, if there's a cave that looks really interesting that has a bunch of shiny treasure in it, maybe you just mark it down like, hey, come back to this later, you know, and move on because you don't have time to go do that. Or if you do that, you're going to need to take a long rest, you know, that's going to, you know, eat into your time. So I think like that's where you can maybe play with some of the like, the how is this interesting is like exploring a hex is going to take you a day if you want to explore it thoroughly, or if you just want to walk through it, it's going to take you half a day. Right. You know, or if you go into that cave, it's going to take you 3 days. Right. Like, so I think you can play with it a little bit that way.
I really like it. That's like, that's really simple, but really good. Like it does a lot of the work, just setting a deadline.
Yeah, I think it would. The other thought that I had is, and this would be harder to pull off, I think it'd be fascinating if there was a way for the players to like note information for themselves, but not for the king. That makes sense. Like, so they see that cave and like it's full of treasure and it's like, maybe that just doesn't make it onto the map, but they know about it.
Yeah.
So they can go back and then it becomes like maybe we need to hide this cave a little bit better, you know, so we can come back to it later or, you know, right. Like you could start to play with that quite a bit. And then you could also, again, to make it even more complex, you, Andy, could have a list of like, okay, so this hex there's a cave. If they spend a lot of time here or they look in this specific place, there's like a, you know, +2 to whatever sword, you know, hidden up in this tree. There's like a magical stag that will, you know, feed them for 3 weeks, you know, like you can just have all these things per hex. And it's like, but if they don't explore it, like their description of that hex is just like, and the path continued through this one, you know, there's all the stuff that they can miss in there too. I think that would give them give the table sort of like a sense of like, oh, if we explore a little bit more, there might be more here. But again, like we have this time pressure or whatever, you know, that's going on with it. Yeah. So I think you can play with it that way in that you can rely on sort of the system as is without having to get into the nitty gritty or like drawing into like having Twilight 2000 sort of tacked onto D&D. Right, if you can kind of like, implement some sort of other pressure that fits more with the system.
I like that. Some other things that I liked from Twilight 2000 that I want to bring in are just like meticulously tracking the weather for like and stuff. I think I want to have other pressures to to bring in on the players, mm-hmm. with the time being the main thing. So here's a slightly different question. So when you think wilderness survival, I think camping, right? Mm-hmm. I think setting up a good secure camp at the end of the day and somebody's on watch duty and, you know, all that good stuff. If that were to be a regular thing, if you're playing for 3 hours on a Friday night, maybe you camp three times.
Mm-hmm.
What's a good camp scene that lets camp be something special,
mm-hmm.
that can survive getting repeated like 50 times over the course of a campaign?
That's a good question. I don't know of anything that can survive getting repeated 50 times, unless you came up with like a fun mini game, like a fun sort of sideboard game for them to do. I mean, I think, I know we've talked about it in the podcast, like I did at one point, I had this like this deck of like questions to ask around the campfire. They were just all like role-playing focused things, right? So you draw off the top of the deck and it's like, you know, describe the first time that, I don't know, you wanted to be an adventurer. You know, like, and you can just make a stack of those questions if you wanted to and award them inspiration or whatever, you know, if you want to make it so it's like mechanically advantageous. But I think like that can be a good way to explore your character. Because again, for me, thinking about camping, like the interesting part about camping is the getting away and sitting around and like just having time to sort of talk like around the fire or like, yeah, you know, spending time outside. So like that's going to be more, I think, where you might do some of your role playing stuff.
I think a lot about video games like Baldur's Gate 3 or mm-hmm. the Mass Effect games do this. They really successfully make the like camping something you look forward to and relish. You set up your camp or you head back to your ship in Mass Effect or whatever. At the end of like, you know, when you have used up all your resources, you fought really hard, you don't have anything left to give, so it's time to like go refresh back at camp. And then those video games, you know, it's kind of a trope. Okay, we're back at like camp. This is where you walk around and talk to all of your party members and you hear their backstories. There's no pressure here. Nothing's going to attack you. That's where like the fun character stuff happens. And I mean, ideally in a tabletop RPG, you're having fun character developing stuff like all the way as you're playing.
Yeah.
But it does feel neat, you know, in Baldur's Gate 3, you'd hit that camp button and then it switches you to camp mode and you can walk around everyone's tent and gossip with them.
Yeah.
That's a really fun experience. And I'm just wondering, how I can capture a little bit of that without it, like, again, immediately getting old. I like your idea of, I think we could get a lot of mileage out of, you know, going through different questions to ask at the back to camp stage. Is there a way that the players could be doing something at that back to camp stage that's a little more active than passively like kind of responding to role-playing prompts? Does that make any sense?
It's hard because it's like everything that I'm thinking about is like, again, the bookkeeping sort of stuff. So like, I mean, you could really be like, you can't change equipment until you're resting, right? Like, so it's like they have to rest to change out equipment or, you know, refresh spell slots, like all that sort of stuff. Like, so there's sort of like the mechanical reason, like why getting back to camp would be really exciting. You could introduce an NPC or two that's going along with them. And like, that's your prime time. Like, again, like, yeah, just to rip off Baldur's Gate 3, right? Like that's your time to get nuggets of like interesting story.
Yeah.
Story from all the, like all the NPCs that you have going along with you. So, I mean, yeah, send along the king's son, like send along the prince, you know, along with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. And like, that's your time to manipulate them or learn or whatever that has to be.
There's only one thing that you could be doing, and that is keeping him from getting killed at like every possible.
Oh, turn. Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
He's of course incompetent.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I do like the idea of, I mean, so the game that I'm playing right now with Matt, like, we keep on picking up NPCs, and they just, like, they go on the boat with us, you know, along with it. It's, like, it's just this, like, swelling, like, you know, group of people that's going around with us. And, like, that's super fun. And then we find ourselves, like, wanting to check in with them, you know, like, see what's going on with those people. So, like, I mean, why not? Like, have them pick up pets and NPCs and stuff like that. So like camp then becomes almost like a party. And I think you can kind of like just say like, well, they're not in combat. It's fine. Like they're, you know, they're a day behind you.
Okay. Well, that gives me a lot of food for thought. Unless you had anything else to add, I think I'm fine calling a wrap on this topic.
Yeah, no, that's good. I mean, I'm really fascinated to see what you end up with here. I mean, I think it sounds to me it's super fun, the idea of like just doing a hex crawl like that. And I think you've played enough tactical games that I think you'll find ways to make it fun for your players.
I'll report back how that goes. I'll know in a couple weeks how it started, at least. So
yeah, that's great. That's cool. All right. Yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, I think that does it for us. Yeah. So we've been Roll for Topic. We're part of the Roll for It Media Podcasting Network, our sister show, The Splat Book, with John Corey and Ben and Jess is wonderful. I think they've had some special guests on. I'm a little bit behind on their podcast feed. I'm behind on all my podcasts right now, but it is great. You can go check them out at thesplatbook.com. And then also go check out Zombie Strains with Andy and John. It's really good. I just finished listening to one of them about the Maniac, and then there was another one with Bob Hope that I've just completely forgotten the name of.
Ghost Breakers.
Yeah, yes. Ghost Breakers. Yeah, that one was really fun. I, though, am particularly excited. They have one coming out soon. I think by the time you hear this, it'll be out for Shaun of the Dead, which is my favorite zombie movie, if not one of my like top 10 favorite movies, I think, maybe of all time. So
okay, wow.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I hope we do it justice. Yeah, our producer gives me and John little treats every now and then for getting through these, slogging through these like 1930s racist films. We get to skip ahead and watch a modern film.
Yeah.
Although we've also learned that some modern films are also racist, but
that's the more that changes, the more that stays the same. So,
anyway, thanks for the plug. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, that does it for us. I've been Chris Salzman.
I've been Andy Rao.
Remember, if your player's having fun, you're a great GM.